What up, though? This your boy DOC, and welcome to another episode of the Doc Hicks Podcast. We got a very, very special guest on the platform today, Ruel, producer, beat maker, student of the game. If you're not putting him in your top five of producers from Detroit, you tripping. But I don't want to talk your ear off. Let me go ahead and get to this interview so you can go ahead and know who this is. Peace. What up, though? This your boy DOC, and I got a very special guest on the platform today. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself and where you from.
Yo, what's the deal? It's Mr. Ruel. Stop playing. Biggest YouTube sensation. You know, I'm hailing from Detroit, 313. Detroit, stand up.
Word, man. Well, once, you know, for first off, I'd like to say, man, I greatly appreciate you coming on the platform and chopping it up with us today.
Oh, no, you know, it's an honor. I appreciate you for having me on.
Yeah, man. It's been a minute since I can't put an exact date or month on it, but it was a minute ago when I first ran across your work on YouTube. And it was crazy because, you know, on YouTube skimming around and, you know, put like different little background beats. So I made sure I can't remember what I typed in. And more than likely, it's probably like Detroit something type beats or something like that. And it came up, but I seen it was like free copyright, you know, copyright free or something like that. Yeah. But I didn't put two and two together. You know what I mean? That this person was actually from the city though. You know what I mean? So once I ended up finding that out, and then from that point on, constantly hearing your tag like with different artists like growing since then, like take us back to the beginning of like before you even got into making beats yourself, like how was your upbringing and all that stuff like leading you into getting into the music game?
Well, I mean, growing up is really the typical single parent household situation, inner city, that most young black men go through. Eventually, I ended up moving to the nicer part, like, you know, when you cross Greenfield on 8 Mile and it's not considered the city no more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You end up moving over there. I started transitioning out of playing sports into making music. I used to go to this program downtown called Youthville. And everybody that went to Youthville, they'd be like, oh, that's crazy. You went to... It's going to get us some nice reception. But yeah, I ended up going to Youthville and they had a beat making program. And I used to have a keyboard at the house. And I used to just play the same like four notes over and over again. And it would just be so irritating. Like my mom would tell me like, turn it off, like stop. So I went up there and I just kept doing it. And I ended up getting the attention of the teacher. He's like, oh, who taught you them chords? And really, it just went from there. I've been producing for over a decade. So I really started off trying to... See, the thing is, most people got the mindset of, like, get out the hood. Most black people got that mindset. And yeah. I don't know where it comes from, but I sort of took that same approach when I first started. I was like, man, I want to be bigger. I'm not even going to try to do Detroit-type stuff, take the city. I'm going to just go straight, like, national. I want to get the big sound, the big artists, billboards. So I started off doing that, and for years, I ended up making my own hit single. But that turned into a tragedy. It was a whole lot of turmoil.
So, what, you was rapping yourself?
Yeah, I used to be an artist.
Okay, all right. So, what you mean that it was tragic?
Well, you ever post something on YouTube and then you get a copyright claim? Like, mm-hmm. might feature like a 10-second audio clip or some music or anything like that, and you get a copyright claim or even a takedown notice.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happened with me was I had released a song called Whip It Like This. You can YouTube it, Google it. At the time, like the first month that it came out, I think I had did 15 million streams.
Mm.
So this was before the streaming era. This was like 2014. The streaming era had just started, so... Like, people were still making decent money off of streams. It wasn't like a 14th of a cent.
Right, right.
So, I got flown out by QC, like a whole bunch of different record labels. But at the time, people were still in a building phase. It wasn't as big as people know it to be now. But I had found out that somebody had copyrighted my name, like they trademarked it, I believe. And if anybody knows anything about copyright law, is that you can't, you're not allowed to trademark a name. You can't copyright somebody's name. So I don't even know how they got that off, but I ended up getting my name copyrighted, and all my business ventures, since nobody was like vested in, like had anything, like no reservations as far as helping me out, like they were just able to take down all my stuff and sort of make it so I couldn't release music, and I ended up having to pay money back to them for a song that I put out. And for years I couldn't release music. I had people with, like, I had done features for people in the city and their songs was getting taken down. And like, bro, why would you get my song taken down? You changed up. You done got a little
Damn.
fame. And now you wanna. And so I got into a lot of little beefs because of that, if that's what you wanna call it.
Yeah.
And so it was that for a long time.
So was this somebody, of course, don't have to speak like in detail of who, but I'm just wondering personally, did you know who copyrighted your shit? Was this someone close to you or just some random person that was, seeing your come up and just jumped on it first?
If you go on YouTube right now and you search Ruel, it's gonna be a couple Ruels that pop up. I'm the biggest one now, but it's another Ruel that had did it. I don't want to say which one, but there's another Ruel that had did it, and you can pretty much, if you see it, you'll be able to say like, oh, that's how it is. That's how they plan. It's like our conversation earlier before we had got on air about people from outside the culture, sort of taking a look in and seeing how they could exploit it. It's one of them type of situations.
See, I didn't even know niggas was like, I'm not gonna say I can imagine, because motherfuckers be doing that shit with everything. Like, you got people that be sitting off in the cut. They could just be in Iowa, anywhere. I think I heard about Cash Doll going through a situation like that where she was trying to start her website, and people will go ahead and get the web domain and then try to charge you $15,000, $20,000 just because, you know what I'm saying? Everybody trying to find a way to hustle. So I'm wondering, like, was he just copywriting his own name and then it affected you, or he was purposely doing that directly to you because your shit was the one that was blowing?
Well, the thing is, at the time, I can remember getting an email saying that somebody owns the copyright to this name. Have your label reach out so we can reach some type of payment plan or some type of settlement, and for us to release it. And I'm like, what is this? I'm a kid at the time. I don't know who they're talking. I don't know. I have no idea. That I'm like, man, don't nobody own my name. How you going? I'm Ruel. How you gonna do that? So, just after a couple of weeks went by, I woke up one day and all my stuff was just taken down. It was real. It was real shocking. I was real jaded after that, you know. So, I mean, I couldn't even tell you. Like, I have. It's really. I haven't even spoken to the person. I gotta. Like I said, I end up having to pay money back to them because of it.
That's crazy. So, out of that whole situation, what would you say you like that you learned from it? And if what advice would you give to someone that's coming up to possibly dodge that type of situation?
Get a lawyer. That's the biggest thing. Like, it's better to be proactive than reactive. And I tell that to everybody, because the thing is, you don't know what you don't know. So it's not one of them situations where I say, oh man, I wish I did this differently, or I wish I could have went on my way to cross my T's and dot my I's. At the time, I thought I was good because I didn't know. That's you can't be the smartest person in your circle. Like, at the time, I didn't have any OGs or anybody to tell me like, this is what you should do. Even the people that I was around, what didn't necessarily have my best interest at the time in their heart. So you just got to make sure that you get somebody that's knowledgeable, like find you a mentor and somebody that you feel can help you along your journey. I think that was the biggest lesson, but those people is few and far between. So if you come across one, make sure that you take advantage of that opportunity. I think that's the biggest. If I was going to tell anybody, give anybody any advice, that's what I would tell them to do.
Word, because that was something I was eventually going to ask. Like, throughout this process of your career growing and going in a direction, like when you made the statement of having to not be the smartest person in your circle and obtain mentors and different people that may have knowledge and different information than that you have yourself. Like, how was that transition? Like, did you have to eventually stop dealing with people that you may have grown up with because they didn't have the same vision as yourself, to like remove yourself and put yourself in different rooms with different people? Like, was that a transition you had to go through?
Big transition. It's crazy that you mentioned that. So at the time, so I got copyright claimed in late 2015. So early 2016, I had ended up going out to LA. And this was one of the biggest regrets that I had, is that I wasted a year in LA dealing with somebody that was just trying to use me. And it was because somebody that I had grown up with told me to work with this person, not knowing that it was another potential for me to just ruin my career by even dealing with this person and the situation that I got put in. And so it was a big transition period of just figuring out, trying to just take a step back and figure out, what can I do? Like, what's in my scope? Like, what's the best way that I can be self-reliant? And that's what eventually drew me to YouTube. It's because I can curate all the content myself. I own the licenses. I own the rights to it. When I create it, can't nobody tell me necessarily, except for YouTube, what I got to do.
Right.
So that's what really drew me to YouTube.
And go ahead and tell them, like, what's the official name of your YouTube channel?
The official name of my YouTube channel is Ruel Stop Playing. R-E-U-E-L. Stop Playing. You guys can go ahead and subscribe. Make sure you guys subscribe to Doc Hicks TV, too. You know, that's important. Got to do that.
Word. So after those trials and tribulations that you went through, did that kind of make you weary about even fucking with the game? Did you fall back for a minute, or you kept going strong?
I like to think that I'm still going strong. It's all about reinventing yourself. I had the thoughts. Everybody got them thoughts when you're an entrepreneur. Like, man, this ain't working out. But no 2 days are the same. I heard that from a Los and Nutty song. Those are Detroit artists. Make sure you guys go check them out. But no 2 days are the same, man. That's really an important message. Like, you just got to keep grinding and believe in your vision. And it's easier said than done, because it's been days where I was ready to throw in the towel, man. I'm trying to tell you. But as far as being weary, it was a struggle for a long time after that, getting inspired, because I was so jaded. But I mean, maybe you can speak to it, but when you feel like something is for you, you just got to keep pushing through it. I don't even know how to describe it, but you just got to keep grinding.
No, I feel you. Like, I 100% feel you, because, like you say, little bitty bullshit happened behind the scene, and you know it's something that you passionate in doing because you love it, and don't, especially finding something that you actually love to do, it don't seem like work. But then when running across these situations, dealing with either other personalities, different characters, especially because I don't consider myself to be, like, quote unquote, in the industry or nothing like that, but having to deal with different people in the industry, dealing with different egos, different, you know, everybody has a quote unquote image that they either, it may be them, this and that. It could just be different situations that make you want to fall back from it. But then it's like, okay, I can't let that stop me, because then now it's like I kind of let this situation defeat me. And, you know, it's a lot of motherfuckers out here that don't want to see other people win, which is fucked up within our community. Instead of a lot of people clapping and applauding, you know, another man's success and using that as inspiration, it seems like people kind of get a chuckle out of, or, you know, something out of seeing someone that was in a position, you know, being torn down. But yeah, I feel you as far as having the moments of being jaded and not giving up, you know. So, like, what would you consider to be, like, one of your biggest scores as far as, I don't know the terminology of being a producer. If y'all call it scores, like, you know, the one of the biggest songs or scores that you didn't have placement on with artists.
My biggest accomplishments?
Yeah.
Man, a lot of stuff I signed non-disclosure, so I can't even talk about it. But in the next few months, like going into 2020, something is dropping that's going to be real big. And I'm very, very proud of myself for actually doing it, like with some A-list celebrities. But as far as one of my biggest accomplishments was breaking myself. Like people don't, I don't think people understand how hard to do like that. Like actually accomplishing that is such a hard task. It's equivalent to like you breaking a podcast. I want to say it's almost the same in anything. Like a startup that's successful, yeah. It's so difficult. Like to me, that's my biggest. Like looking back, like nobody can take that from me. Like I put myself on.
Yeah, was it necessarily your tag that helped brand yourself, or because I hear the quote unquote producer game is a rough game. You know what I mean? Like I got a homie from Seattle or whatever, known since he was like producing for Messy Marv back in the day, and he was telling me like he was like, man, that the producer game been changed so much from like back in the day, and not to be in your pockets, but just speaking in general. That and everybody's circumstances may be different. He was like, man, you know, back in the day, a motherfucker damn near pay you up front for a beat. But he was like, now you kind of just send out packs to different people. And then basically, if it gets selected, then it's kind of a waiting game. Then, you know, then the stipulations and all that stuff. Like, is it, of course, you're doing something that you love, but can the business side of it get crazy?
The producer, pardon my language, but the producer gets fucked the most out of the whole cycle of putting a song out, dealing with labels, all of that. Like the producer always gets the short end of the stick, and it's extremely hard to avoid doing that. And even outside of dealing with major labels or independent artists or anything like that, just selling a beat, now it's to the point where like people is charging like, you can get 10 beats for a dollar.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's crazy. Like, how can you, like... the price is so... They flooding the market with the low quality, but extremely low prices. And it's so hard to compete with that just from just selling beats, just period. Like, just from the ground, just the basic level. It's so hard to just... The money and even the value in the entertainment industry... With streaming, it's plummeted so much because everything now is subscription based. So you paying, it's like even with Netflix, it's thousands of movies on Netflix, and you get to watch them all for $9. So that $9 is getting split an infinite amount of ways.
Right.
So it's the value of it is so low, and to be at the bottom of the pecking order, it's like you getting. You're having the hardest time getting the people to acknowledge to pay you because it's a culture of not wanting to pay for beats.
And right.
On top of that, you got to deal with getting the paperwork right so your money coming in on the back end is good. It's just a lot that goes into it, man. It's a lot.
Was that something, you know, I don't want to say of course because you may have, but was that just something you end up having to learn as time go? Because I don't know, like I said, I don't sell or produce or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how the transition is where maybe an artist reach out to the producer or vice versa, or artists may feel like, oh, I got a big name. You should be giving me this shit for free type thing. And then the person, because that's kind of like what the other dude was saying. He was like, sometimes you kind of be put in a position where you want to do stuff because you want your name to be attached to this particular artist, because then it may help drive in other people that want to, you know what I'm saying? And I just be like, which of course, like you see a lot of producers getting hella money, coming up, having successful lives. Like I said, I just don't the business, but like you say, with streaming and all that, like, so from the time that you reach out or vice versa with an artist, it's already like paperwork involved.
See, the thing is, if you introduce paperwork too early, it might scare the artist. It might make them feel like, oh, you don't trust me. Like, oh, you don't mess with me. Like, you know I'm going to take care of you. It's that kind of stuff. It's like people will play like, it's like they acting on morals and principles when it's really, like, you could take them at their word, and the whole time it's just a finesse. But that's just the music game. It's full of sharks.
Right.
But back to the point you said, like having your name attached to something, just doing it just because you want to have your name associated. Most people look at producing as a loss leader, like, and that's a term in business where something you might be losing out on money on a particular venture, but it's helping spread brand awareness.
Right.
It's really spreading the image. And so a lot of people look at producing as a lost leader just because they can get their name attached to a certain big artist. Like one day you might wake up and say you got a Drake song, right? But you didn't charge Drake, but now you got the accolade. So now your price is in the shot way up. But
right.
The odds, it's an uphill battle for sure. I can say that.
Yeah. And to me, that's crazy to even hear, but not to say that it couldn't be happening, because we see a lot of examples of in the industry of different producers trying to sue artists later on down the line, this and that. But when you say that the producers get the short end of the stick most of the time, because a lot of times it's the beat that what makes the song.
Yeah, a lot of times that's what it starts with. It starts with the beat. So it's really amazing that the driving force is the person behind it has the hardest time getting paid off the music.
Yeah. So what type of steps, and not, you may not want to give out the information or not, but you know, when you said the biggest accomplishment was breaking yourself, like how was that branding part, like branding your style, branding your business and everything else? Because I'm listening to different terminology that you use, which would make me think like, oh, okay, a person that either really studied the game for, you know, by visually, or sat down with a book and studied the game to see how this worked. Like, how did the branding process go?
It's really just taking my lumps and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And it's a lot, taking a lot of L's, man. But really, as far as branding, that learning process for me was taking a look at the time, who was the biggest artist? What are their fans most responsive to? What are they doing? Like what outlets are they using? What people are they going to in order to ensure that the product is delivered right? With the product is yourself. It's a lot of focusing on, because nowadays it's a lot of direct to consumer. Like I can just upload a song on the internet straight to iTunes, Spotify, Tidal. It's a lot of direct to consumer. So what you want to focus on is making your fans feel connected to you. Like nowadays, like back in the days, it used to be all about mystique. Like the artist was sort of in control. Nowadays, I want to say more so the fans have more control. Like they can dictate what your content is about, just because most services are catered to the people more so than the artist. Like, right. For example, on YouTube, like algorithms are sort of based off what people are going to click. They try to maximize the clicks. So it sort of forces you to sort of shift your content in a direction that you might not have done otherwise or by yourself. So a lot of marketing is just focusing on what your consumer, like who is your target audience? What are you looking at? And that was sort of the learning process for me, was figuring out who am I trying to get to buy this on for 99 cents? Like, how can I get the most people to do that?
Right. How you looking at the actual, you know, the city as a whole right now, and the progress and everything that's been going on for the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 years and everything like that? Like how is your outlook on the game right now locally?
Locally, I can really appreciate like the growth. We still got some. It's always room for improvement, but I think right now Detroit is in the best place it's been musically, outside of when Dope Boys was blowing up prior, like in the past few years. But I think now we at a place where the city used to be really divisive, like East Side versus West Side versus Southwest versus up North Saginaw, Kalamazoo, it's all territory. And to me, like a lot of the newer artists have broken down them barriers, and it's really allowed. Like, to me, there's more major label attention on Detroit. Like, Detroit has a spotlight on it now more than it's ever been. Like, there's major outlets looking at Detroit artists like Fader, Complex,
right.
Note Jumper, Like there's actual people like with their eyes on Detroit artists that have a authentic Detroit sound.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, because to be honest with you, and I like just to keep it 100% funky, and I never took it personal, but honestly, like when we was talking off the record, when I was like, you know, starting the platform around 2013, like, cause I went off to, like, I graduated from high school in 99, like, so it was a minute ago, but I moved off to school to end up coming back. And, you know, of course, since a kid, been a hip hop fan, different things of that nature, and, you know, seeing the different waves of different groups in the city or different solo artists in the city that, you know, doing their music stuff. And I would just always see, especially when it really clicked to me, especially when I moved out of state and I seen the lack of representation on the music side of like kind of respect for Detroit, let alone not even just saying the Midwest as a whole. Like when motherfuckers down there speak about the rap game, they'll say East Coast, West Coast, down south. A lot of people won't even say the Midwest. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
So that was a concern to me. Like, something has to happen. I'm like, okay, we can't depend on them to embrace or respect what we got going on. So I'm looking at other platforms. I'm looking at every region. I'm like, okay, almost every region has a major platform. And I'm like, okay, this kind of weaves in a little bit of the traffic. Now, not to say that each, like, okay, you do have like the Thizzlers that's out in the Bay. They're strictly kind of Bay Area, but they do, it's still other platforms on the West Coast that, yeah, they do a lot of local stuff, but they still, if major artists or whoever artists come in there and they doing their thing, they still fuck with them or whatever the case might be. I noticed that, like, to say Cheeses of the world, yeah, he from Dallas. He show his people love this and that, but he still fuck with it. But I'm still looking at every region almost has a flag post. So that was like the intentions behind, like, okay, man, we need something that's going to be able to connect home to other places. But I'm like, okay, now I look at Detroit, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, because since being a producer, I look at like, okay, majority of the time when a Detroit artist pop, like, you have Ohio, of course, the Bay. Well, I'll start with, of course, the Bay more than likely fucks with the music. Ohio, Milwaukee, possibly Kentucky, and you know, and maybe like a couple other hub places, you know what I mean, that fuck with us. So I'm like, okay, if the artist already has that audience, and if I'm focusing on that same audience, I'm basically putting them right back in front of the people that already know them. So I'm like, okay, maybe I should take another route by, you know, doing content from different places, so I could pick up fans that's from Florida, that's from Massachusetts, that's from these, you know, other states. So then when someone from the crib come on the platform, hopefully I can put them in front of people that don't particularly know them already. But it was a struggle from the very beginning, because, you know, of course, if people don't either physically know you or you not up in they circles, you know, around, like you were saying, the city is hella divisive. And I had to break out of a mindset of like, I ain't fucking with these niggas, this and that, about they from over there, you know. Yeah, that's just how, you know, just how it is. But I'm glad to see what's been going on. What would be some key things that you would say if not necessarily one individual, just as a whole, things that the local industry could implement that would make things grow even further?
See, there's two schools of thought on this, and I feel you 100% about trying to grow your audience to bigger than just a few isolated cities. And it's a problem that I go through with as well, being catered to a Detroit audience. Because you see, there's Detroit artists that get millions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like a pump out a million, but it's, the thing is, it's the same people. It's not like, it's not national or international. It's the same group of people just playing a song, which is perfectly fine. You can,
right,
you can run up a check. You can go crazy doing that. You can feed your kids off of that. And I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with that. But to me, the thing that would have the greatest impact is if the Detroit sound was national. It would be almost be like the Atlanta, like how the Atlanta sound is national, and artists are able to tour across the nation, international, Europe, UK, Africa. Artists are able to do all that. with a regional sound, and I wish Detroit was the same way. And I've been struggling to figure out what's needed for Detroit to get over that hump.
Right.
Because there's like I said, there's two schools of thought. It's one that Detroit music isn't scalable, meaning that it doesn't travel. And there's a thought that Detroit music is the next wave of music that is gonna be like that. And I'm sort of torn in between, am I being pigeonholed or am I breaking something? And so if I had to give any advice on how to implement some tools that would help it grow, I think I would say, like, artists have to pool together and just pour, like, just focus on building an infrastructure that allows artists to, that would give an artist even just a chance to be in front of some different people. And I don't know if that's, you have to go outside of Detroit and build back to Detroit, or if you have to start in Detroit and try to build out, try to break the wall down. It's a very difficult task, and I'm still trying to figure it out myself, really, because it's a challenge. Like you said, it's not that much representation here, and I really think it starts with the jobs here. Like, back in the days, it used to be Motown, right?
Exactly.
Detroit was the biggest thing. But the thing is, I feel like a lot of Motown was connected to the plants. Like, there was a lot of jobs, so it was a lot of time for people to have to for them to focus on some, like, extracurricular activities outside of just working.
Right. But
now it ain't no industry, so people not really even focused on that no more. So it's less opportunities, and it's just a whole trickle down thing, I believe. So people really lost touch of having, like, the pulse of what's going on, and I think that really set us back. So it's kind of hard to say what one thing. It's really, you got to focus. You got to take everything into account. Like, you got to build infrastructures as far as labels, marketing, A&Ring, platforms outside of music where you can leverage a celebrity to sell stuff, because you got to have capital.
Right.
It's a lot that goes into building those major platforms in each city. Because you got to think about it. Like, Atlanta been doing it for the past 10 years, 10 plus years.
Daniel Dub,
and before that, you know, it was the West Coast, and then for the West Coast, it was the East Coast, and they had these long runs. I think Detroit just has to get started again, which we doing. It's taking a minute, so it's kind of hard to gauge if we going somewhere fast or is we, like, it's kind of hard to tell what's really what works and what's not working, because it's such a slow process.
Right.
So it's hard to say what one thing I would do.
I, like, just, you know, on a conversational level, and, you know, people that's listening could end up agreeing or disagreeing, you know, especially if they from the city. Like, I feel like starting with the mentality, a lot of things has to change, you know what I mean? And like you say, as far as the supportive level, of course, it got to be. And I understand that everybody not going to be able to kumbaya. That's just how it is. But when it comes to business, like, okay, some type of, you know, some type of unity or some type of mutual understanding when it comes to just business. And definitely, like what you said, with creating an infrastructure, because it was a episode that I put up, I don't know what number it was, but I had made a video, and it was kind of, I wouldn't say out of anger, but it was, people was constantly asking me prior to the BMF series that came out, and, you know, prior to, like, Dusty and Smoke Campino coming on the platform, they were just constantly asking, like, you know, like, yeah, you do Detroit stuff, but why don't you do more? And I think a lot of people, and this is just my thought process on it. I'm like, a lot of people don't fully understand the culture of Detroit. And I'm not saying just from a negative connotation, like, just across the board, the culture of Detroit, period. You know what I mean? And like I say, it goes back to me being able to leave and be gone for like 4 or 5 years. I would just see how the news talked about Detroit to the couple states that I lived in. I'm like, they made Detroit if a motherfucker had never been to Detroit a day in their life and never had a family member that there that could just tell them, like, okay, this is how it really is, like, you would think that it's like a third world country. Every fucking place is abandoned. Like, niggas, I actually have seen a shift in the comments, like, when the snowball first started rolling, and then you would just see people in the comments just, you know, of course you got trolls and shit. Right. They'd be like, oh, y'all need to worry about the abandoned houses. Y'all broke as hell there, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking to myself, like, y'all just don't know. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, every city and state has a good part and bad part. People getting money, this and that. And I'm like, people don't understand the culture. And I'm like, and a lot with media has helped perpetuate making people view Detroit a certain way. So I wonder if that indirectly kind of stunted people's wanting to get to know Detroit on the music side, because they have a perception about Detroit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I wonder if that has hurt in some type of ways. Now people are fighting through it, because now I'm seeing a shift in the comments where I see people like, hey, man, Detroit got the raw street rap scene out, period. The most authentic street rap scene. You know what I'm saying? So I'm seeing a shift in that. And like you said, going back to how do you go from having Motown to then you have 2-3 decades go by without no musical history? And that's kind of making Eminem exempt to that. You know what I'm saying? Just like,
I don't really, not to send no shade at Eminem, I think he's a big part of Detroit music, but I don't necessarily consider him a part of the urban scene.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That, and to me, that's why it'd be shocking to me, because for some reason, we have seen like the Lord Jamars and the Vlad TV and all this conversation that have sparked within the past year, 2 years, where, you know, people constantly throw shade at him. One thing I noticed, I had a conversation with a dude on Instagram, and I really just noticed that it's not nothing to do, really. And everybody, I can't speak for everybody, but a lot of the people, it's mainly because just Eminem is white. You know what I'm saying? That he, where he get his backlash from. It's not necessarily because of his, if he's talented, and maybe it's just not something sonically people want to listen to, but majority of his backlash come because he's, you know, he's a white guy. You know, and I kind of feel when he blew and got so big, he was waving the flag for Detroit, wearing D hats, this and that, never shied away from putting on for the city. I think consumers end up expecting to want to, they was thinking, okay, so let me tap in with other Detroit artists, and thinking they was going to hear other mini Eminems. You know what right. I'm saying? People maybe with the same super, the lyrical miracle, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, it's a whole nother side. And I think it got to be, I feel like it has to be some type of way on a certain type of a bigger scale to bridge that gap, to bring people over to understand this is the reason why. Okay, this, where this sound came from, how it originated, this and that. Because I'll put it out there, like, it's a lot of history of things that I feel like just people don't know. And it's, one of the very first albums that I was probably able to just rock and listen to in the house was Dr. Dre's The Chronic album. Right. Reason being, because it was a lot of funkadelic influence. Now, people do their history on the funkadelics, you know what I'm saying? That's basically the members in that group was from Detroit and Jersey, basically. You know what I'm saying? But mainly Detroit. You, what they know as G-Funk basically was a derivative and a flip of P-Funk. That was also bringing you back to the Motown again. So I wonder, I'm like, throughout this whole time in music, so many things, and everything I'm saying is no shade to the people that I'm talking about, because I have respect for what they do, because hip-hop has always been kind of a sampling type thing. Like, even when we speak about Kanye West, when he first came out and was doing a lot of samples, a lot of them old school samples was coming from old school shit that probably came about a Motown back in the day. So I'm like, okay, so by the time now Detroit is getting some shine, I'm like, motherfuckers done sucked up so much of the resources. When niggas do some shit, people think that we taking from them. And then when it's like, no, we really doing us. This is what we... You know what I'm saying? But it comes off as, oh, no, y'all sound like them. Like, no, this is actually some shit niggas been doing, or this is, you know, so I don't know. But that part that you said about the infrastructure, that's why I even said all that stuff. is very key, because Atlanta gets it. Like, of course, they got inner turmoil. Any place is not going to be perfect, but they understand the fact of that they at the point right now where they can bottle up a nigga that haven't even been rapping, and make this nigga, yeah, get this nigga in the booth, like basically walk him through his verse, and bang, boom, push him out to the world, because they know as long as they keep somebody from their city in out here in their face, that is going to still is basically still helping the city. And I wonder, do you? I'm asking you this: do you think that we get that?
That's a tough question. Do we get it? I think if we just look at that's a question, like, objectively, the numbers will say no, we don't. Because, I mean, I think a lot of Detroit is just, like, the optics of it is that, like, Detroit artists are, like, it's a risky, like, a high-risk, low-reward investment. Like, rest in peace to Dex Osama. You take a look at that situation.
Yeah.
A super bubbling Detroit artist meets a super unfortunate demise. And it's just like, dang, Detroit artists, they can't even, like, it seems like every time a song blow up in Detroit, beef comes from it.
Yeah.
Every time. Like, I don't want to speak on it on a street level, but if you just,
right,
anybody that knows, like, just behind the scenes, like, if you look at any big Detroit song, 9 times out of 10, if it's really authentic, it's a beef that comes on later because of it.
Right. And
I would just have to say no. I don't think Detroit gets it. Like, even I don't really want to like bring up all these old past events, but even if you take a look at the Doughboys and the history of what, like, their careers, it's just like they signed a Jeezy, and then the situation happens, and now it's sort of like, dang, like, artists, they on camera, stuff happening, and it's just Detroit artists can't come together. And I don't want to say it's a crab in a barrel mentality, because to me, crab never meant to be in barrels.
Right.
So it's, I got to say, we definitely is something missing, like some information missing for sure.
I wonder if, like, especially with all the information that I hear that you have, and not to even say that it's technically one individual yourself responsibility, but I wonder if people like yourself and other like-minded individuals were able to construct, like how they just had that revolt conference, but do something locally like that periodically in the city, maybe once a year or twice a year, and help spread certain knowledge to the youth and different people. Because I think if the narrative start, because I feel like a lot of people follow what they think cool is, you know what I'm saying, and if people can rewrite the narrative of what cool is and not feel like another person's success automatically equates to their failure, or look at another person's success as a slap in their face when they don't know them from a can of paint, to take that person's success is like, oh, okay, if they can do it, we can do it. Because like you're saying with Atlanta, if one person shines, it keeps the light on the whole city, which opens up the door for someone else to come, and they may not be from the same zone or the same side or whatever, but it keeps the light on them. I don't know if it's just going to take time, but what you said is 100% correct with Dex, and it's been, I don't want to say every era.
That's what I'm saying. I don't even want to bring it up, but it's every single time it's a big artist or a big song or a movement is happening, it's always something tragic that happens, or not even tragic, just something that shouldn't happen.
Right, and it slows down. It's like it starts the whole process back over at zero again.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I think if people start seeing that, like, okay, this one move possibly out of emotion, who knows, it may be some real stuff behind the scenes, you know, but not into details, but who knows, but a lot of stuff that may be out of emotion or allowing the fans to hype up some shit, you know, because the fans don't give a fuck about niggas at the end of the day.
For real.
Like, you know, and not all, but, you know, you do have a lot of motherfuckers online that's like, they gas a person up to do some stupid shit, and then you do some stupid shit and get locked up, then they'll call you stupid. Or if you get killed, then they call you stupid. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a lose-lose situation, and just constantly looking at the bigger picture, but I am happy to see where things is. Like, I was hella happy, you know, and I don't know none of them from a can of paint, but just to see when Payroll and Peasy start connecting. Then they did the one video that was on All Above, and they was majority of them was all at the video shoot together. I'm like, that was for the city a historical moment, you know, for this type of unity to happen and continuously hopefully can keep bleeding over to the, you know, to the next step to go on. But I really feel like some type of local conferences to sit down and talk to the youth, if so they could see people successful in their position and what they're doing outside of the norm of what people may see success as culturally. I'm like, okay, this person, he's a producer, or he's into engineering, or he's a successful manager, or whatever other position, and they kick knowledge and game and talk about and make the dialogue relatable to that person. Because I know, taking myself, like with school, it's only one or two teachers to this day that I still remember. But the only reason I remember them is because they made however they were teaching relatable. You know what I'm saying? Like, it came from a different place where you could kind of get a connection to them, where you could feel like, okay, this person just wasn't handed everything. They did go through some things in life to get to where they're at, and people will be more prone to listen to them. And hopefully, because I want the ball to keep rolling, because I feel like even with all the success of different artists around the crib, Detroit got something to say.
Definitely. Definitely. I think what you're saying is definitely crucial. Like, it's needed. The only problem is, it's almost like every, if you have a seminar or if you have an event where you're trying to give out knowledge or information, you run the risk of it being a problem at the event. Like the celebrity basketball games or the Coach for Kids or any event like that, you just run the risk of something terrible happening, and now you can't do that no more because police presence won't allow it.
Right.
It's really a twofold issue, because earlier we was having a conversation about positive content not really connecting to people and not really being, like, people not really being receptive to it.
Right.
And then So you have these seminars and it's like you're trying to preach all this positive information and people are like, I ain't trying to really hear that. Like, we're trying to just turn up and go crazy, bro. What are you talking about? Like, that's the kind of the conversations that you would start to have if you start to do that. And it's just I think in order for that change to take place, people will have to want that change to take place. Just putting it out in front of their faces, because the information is out there.
Yeah.
Like, you can see it. Like, you can just take a look at what other people are doing, and they're telling you that the blueprint.
Right.
But people, it's just, they don't, I don't think, there's a lot of people that aren't ready to make that change.
Right. So I'm wondering, say for instance, like, okay, we have sat down, mapped out, if he was calling it a conference or something like that of that nature, like, so basically it's like we can't even include those type of minded individuals and make it somehow, some way. That's what I'm saying, the part about like redirecting the narrative of what cool is, to make people feel like, nigga, if you come to this conference and do some ignorant shit, nigga's gonna be looking at you like, nigga, you on some hoe shit. Like, that need to be, nigga, you on some hoe shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, bro, you don't bring that type of energy here. Like, instead of people championing, oh, nigga, oh, yeah, we whooped that nigga ass, we stumped that nigga out, did this and that, and people get stripes from it. Niggas, they be like, come on, man. You know, because the morals and principles of the streets and just went out the way a minute ago. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It used to be no women, no kids. Women and kids getting shot up just like everybody else nowadays. You know, and it's really fucked up. But it's crazy because hip hop from the very beginning has always been a voice for the streets. You know, so it's always going to be a close net. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to always be intertwined, the streets in hip hop. But I think it has to be a line when people know that they're actually in the presence of, this is business or something for the actual culture of this particular thing that can end up being a multi-million dollar owned thing within not just hip hop in the United States or the world, but just locally within the city. Like, come on, don't come up here and fuck this up. And that's why I said maybe having to focus on the younger ones, you know, because some people, you know, the older we get, the more and more we get stuck in our ways based off of our experiences and shit, and they make us hesitant to do certain things, you know, because we're like, oh man, I didn't seen this page before, I'm not even gonna deal with it. But maybe catching them while they're young, what the decisions, the things that we feel that would be better for the city, maybe the things that we want to be better for the city may not affect what's going on right now. It maybe have to be a 10, 20, 30 year plan.
That's not a bad idea. That just the only thing is, like you said, like, is how do you battle that mindset of you go to this conference and you see somebody that you might not necessarily be on good terms with, and you just let them go. And now rumors is circulating like, oh, he's seen them and nothing happened, versus now we came together to try to build something for the whole entire city as a collective. It's bigger than just you and me. Like, right. how do that mindset is not something that you can easily just change or just inspiring people.
Yeah.
How would you battle that? Like, how do you compete with that?
Yeah. Nice. That's one hell of a question. Like, that's one hell of a scenario where I guess on an individual basis, a person would possibly have to be like, you know how this, in certain situations, how they'll say someone have to be the bigger person. Someone have to be the bigger person and be willing to stand on it and take the arrows that come with it. Like, oh, okay, I seen old boy and I ain't, hey, y'all want to talk shit about me, this and that. Like, it's like you just said, it's bigger than me. It's bigger than that, this and that, whatever, whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. But going back to something when you were saying about connections, do you think if which I don't even like to say a big artist, because I never want to make it seem like niggas from other places are bigger than motherfuckers at the crib. You know what I'm saying? But I would say, okay, more mainstream accepted artist. Mm-hmm. You think if they were to get on a Detroit sounding type of beat, because people, when you brought up Jeezy and the Doughboys, when they were fucking with each other, you know, well, you know, actively fucking with each other during that time, and what they did with YG in that, what was the name of that song he did with Rich Homie Quan, My Nigga, My Nigga?
Yeah.
That, like, that was to me, I looked at that as a very strategic move, because that was a mustard beat, but Jeezy and Rich Homie Quan over that, and since Atlanta already was running shit, getting that sound, like them jumping on that sound, being the artist that they were, it helped spread that sound. Then I felt like that's when that wave came in for people to accept that sound, once they seen some big artists on that, because, you know, people are followers.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, would it take to get someone that's like really, really popping to like get a feature on that track, or end up being a track, to do it, to get other people to accept it, and motherfuckers don't attack them and say, oh nigga, you stealing our shit, this and that, but understand the power play behind it. Like, it's bigger than that. We just trying to get this sound out here to the people to accept it, and then people can end up doing their due diligence and come back and be like, okay, I wonder if that would be a strategic move to do.
I mean, I think what you really did was you just described the formula. The thing is, so we just break that down. We take a look at the elements of that. You had the West Coast sound, which at the time was the wave, like running Billboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they took a bubbling Atlanta artist and Rich Homie Quan and put him on that beat. And then that opened the lane for the whole of Atlanta, if that's what you're saying. We're not going to say that Rich Homie Quan started their wave. I'm not trying to say that at all.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to say it helped propel it, one a big factor in it. The thing is, you have to start the wave. Like, Detroit has to become the wave in order for that to happen.
Yeah.
Is you got to get it off the ground first. That's the problem. After we get it off the ground, see, the problem is, like, people don't understand that success breeds success. So if you see a Milwaukee artist, Ohio artist, New York artist, or Chicago artist on the Detroit sound and beat, a lot of times people in them city, like, they mess with Detroit artists, like, they really enjoy listening to them. But Detroit people, the first thing they say is, all these niggas want to be like Detroit niggas. They still in our flow and saying that they started it, when most of the time, them artists is really excited to work with a Detroit artist, and they show love to Detroit artists. So it's a, it's
Just
really starts here, I believe.
to see things different. Cause that's some real shit. Because one day I got into the rabbit hole of YouTube, and I ran across a couple motherfuckers. I think they were from Milwaukee, and I would have swore up and down they was from the D. Like, the niggas had on buffs and everything. You know,
I already know.
And I was like, and then come to find out, I'm like, oh no, they. And I was like, oh, okay, and I didn't take it from a negative manner. I was like, okay, I see the influence is spreading. So I'm like, that's actually a good thing. But like you say, it have to be more people that take it that type of way instead of getting on their ass or a beef starting up out of it or whatever the case may be. Like, no, let them embrace, because all it's doing, the origins eventually going to have to come out. So let them do what they do. You know what I mean? Like, because if we talking about the Midwest as the, you of course, talking about Detroit, but the Midwest getting on the map, like every region almost has somewhat of a similar, it's an origin type of sound. Different cliques may do different things, but then they still will have that overall sound. The West Coast, down south, East Coast. I think the East Coast may be caught up in a little, if you're talking about New York, you know, because they had the boom bap sound back in the day, and like right now it's from people that I speak to from New York, they say it's kind of, they trying to find that niche again, you know what I mean, of what they can, you know, catch them a sound. But I don't know.
I hear that statement, but I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. Because if you think about it, like every single year, Detroit is, I mean, New York has almost had the, that's, it's had the hottest record starting from, so look, you have Bobby Shmurda, hot nigga, right? After that came Young M.A., right? Then after that came Fat Joe all the way up. Then after that, Cardi B. It's like every year that New York having the hottest records to me.
Do you consider the beats that them records, that those records are on, will be because I understand they can't do the boom bap forever, but would you consider those records to be New York, what we think of New York sounding records?
Only one that I would argue that doesn't sound like a New York record would be the Cardi B. And that was the most recent one. And even then, to me, it still feels very New York. It still feels very authentic when you hear her come on and she got that heavy New York accent.
Right.
That's just me. I'm not telling that's what people should think, but that's just my opinion. I feel like New York has definitely, you can't count them out. I don't want to say that. Don't count them out.
Yeah. So I know you said that you had some things that you signed non-disclosures and stuff, but what are some of the things that you can speak about that you want to let the people know that you got coming out or look forward to that's coming up?
Well, I want to let people know that I'm working on giving out a beat seminar where I sort of give up some gems that I've uncovered along the years, that I'm working on my own tape with all local talent, trying to take it to a bigger spotlight. And I'm really focused on building Detroit artists. So if there's anybody that you feel like you're talented and you feel like you got the drive and you're willing to, and you're really willing to put in that work and work 10 times harder than I work, because if you know me, you know I'm uploading something new every day. I'm always networking. I don't never stop. I take no days off. I just want to let people know that if you feel like you can match my hard work, then I'm here for you. We can really build something. So...
Do you currently have any artists you plan on bringing up under your wing? Like, you know how like some producers, just say for instance like Timberland, what he did with Missy Elliott, or they'll have like their cornerstone artists, you know what I'm saying, where they fuck with a lot of different people, but they got their artists that they fuck with and put their best beats behind and get them popping. Like, you got anything like that possibly in the works or thinking about or willing to fuck with someone on that level?
I'm definitely doing a talent search right now, trying to figure out who that person is gonna be for me or even multiple people. I'm definitely trying to start a movement and a trend, so be on the lookout for that. My project is probably gonna be coming in the third quarter next year. So I definitely like to have you be a part of that if I can get you talking on it, giving up some game. from just an OG perspective.
Word.
Glad you be a part of that.
For sure. Shit, for sure. And just for people that may not know, like, some of the records out there that people, that the records that they may know, if they wasn't 100% paying attention to the tag or whatnot, what's some of the records that you have been behind in producing wise that that came up out of the city?
That came up out of the city?
Or further, or, you know.
Well, just as far as the city goes, back in the days, I produced a song. Well, I got Disappointed by Cash Kid. It's so many songs that I have out right now, just based on my YouTube. Like, I'm doing over 2 million streams just alone. So it's kind of like, they don't even have to notify me. Like, it's just one day I turn on, like with your podcast, and I hear a beat that I did in the beginning of it, and it's like, wow, this content is going crazy.
Yeah.
But I work with Cash Kid, Disappointed, a lot of Joseph McFashion and For Show magazine material. I work with Molly Brazy. I work with Sterl Gotti, Tay B. Almost any artist you can think of, I work with. So definitely keep your eyes peeled, because I got a lot of surprises coming.
Word. Man, and you got the floor. If there's any last things, if you want to plug your social medias or anything like that, you know, you got the floor to let everybody know what's up.
Definitely. Everybody, I want you guys to follow me on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all platforms, Ruel Ethan or Ruel Stop Playing. Subscribe to my YouTube. New content uploaded every day. All free. All for nonprofit uses. Get yourself going. Build yourself up. And let's work.
Word, man. Well, I greatly appreciate you coming on the platform, and this won't be the last time, and I'm definitely down to work, you know, with anything that you got going out, man. Cause I appreciate seeing someone that's putting in hella work, being consistent, you know, pumping out quality music. You know, it don't be like, oh, I just be catching a lot of different things and be like, you know, a person flooding the market with a whole bunch of bullshit. I could tell. I be wondering, I'm like, this nigga, I'm like, he going hard, you know, he really going hard. So I appreciate that, man. And I wish the best for your career and everything else.
Man, likewise, I appreciate you for recognizing that. And I see the grind that you putting on so forth with dropping new content and podcasts. And like, I listen to the Chino podcast. I listen to the Dusty one. Like, you one of the biggest growing outlets for artists that need somewhere to speak that like they can go to. One of the only people in the city that's offering that. I could definitely appreciate that.